You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The San Joaquin Valley has plenty to discover, and much of it is hidden in the dirt. Last year, scientists from the nonprofit River Partners fanned out across the region, collecting samples at multiple locations to learn more about what lives there, using a research tool called environmental DNA, or eDNA. And the InSight team got a firsthand look, traveling down to Dos Rios State Park near Modesto and getting a little muddy in the process. Well, last month, the nonprofit announced that it has data from those collections last year, and the results are promising, with thousands of species in just one sample. Joining us now to talk about the science of eDNA and how it'll be used to guide restoration throughout the region are River Partners senior scientist Sarah Gaffney and eDNA explorer CEO Julie Stanford. Welcome to InSight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Julie, I want to start with you as the CEO of eDNA Explorer. What exactly is environmental DNA?
So, eDNA is basically the dead cells or skin or all the eDNA particles that slough off any living thing. Like all of us right now have a cloud of it around us. And in fact, if you had a COVID qPCR test where you sent your samples to a lab, that was actually an eDNA test looking for COVID in your mucus.
How long has the study of eDNA been around and been used in biology and conservation?
It's been around actually for a really long time. About 30 years ago, a gentleman named Andrew Ogram discovered that you could sequence this genetic material that can be found in water, in sediment, in soil. And at first he used it to study microbes. And then about, say maybe like 14 years ago, the field kind of opened up to really use that genetic material to get a bird's eye view on all organisms in a sample. You know, animals, insects, plants, fungi, microbes, like all of that became possible. And I'd say in the last like 10 years, it's really started to leave academia and turn into a more mainstream resource for understanding what's happening in an ecosystem.
Well, right. I mean, you founded eDNA Explorer. What do you love so much about this type of research and this type of science that you're involved in?
I think it's so exciting. We spun our company out of the Cal eDNA lab at UC Santa Cruz, which we still collaborate with really closely. My background's actually in user research and design and really making technology more accessible to people. And I partnered with Rachel Meyer, who's a professor, who's really an expert in this field, to figure out how you can take these giant data sets of everything that's in an ecosystem and make it be actually understandable and usable for people to make decisions about how to manage these ecosystems more effectively. Mm. And I just became so convinced of the power of this technology to let us see things we've never been able to see before that I really committed to trying to work to really push this forward and make it be accessible to everybody.
Yep, and you partnered with River Partners. Sarah, how long has River Partners been using eDNA?
Our big project last year was our first time, so just 1 year.
So was that exciting to kind of break ground as a nonprofit using, you know, this tool to better understand the areas that you're working to research?
Yeah, it was super exciting. We always are looking for more tools in the toolbox to, you know, assess restoration outcomes, and eDNA was a great opportunity.
How does it complement those other tools that you have in the toolbox?
Yeah, so normally we go out and assess our vegetation by, you know, percent cover, learning what species are there. And then we, you know, do point counts for bird data collection or stick out wildlife cameras. But we can't always see all of the animals. Maybe we didn't put a camera in the right place. And, you know, there's just so much acreage to our sites that we might not catch every single plant. But most importantly, the eDNA is really helping us understand the soil microbiome at all of our sites. You know, what's going on with the bacteria and the fungi.
So Jen Picard and Sarit Lashinsky with Cap Radio InSight team, they went along with River Partners last year and had a lot of fun gathering soil samples at Dos Rios State Park near Modesto. So that was just one site, though, right? How many other sites across the San Joaquin Valley were sampled?
We sampled around 20 sites. So like 10 planning sites that we're going to implement restoration on, and then 10 of their reference sites.
What were some of the other places that you targeted to want to better understand?
Yeah, so we have a few sites in the Kern Valley. So we have Panorama Vista Preserve, which we restored over the last 10 years, serving as a reference site for more work that we want to do along along the Kern River in Bakersfield. We have sites near agricultural sites near Merced in the San Luis National Wildlife Refuge, and then a bunch of sites up near Modesto.
Yeah, the San Joaquin Valley, the Central Valley, is just, you know, so large. How does the team decide where to take their samples? What makes a good site?
Well, this was part of a much larger monitoring effort. We had a large block grant from the state to plan 6,000 acres of restoration. And so we wanted to have this was part of a larger baseline survey of what is going on at all of our sites before implementation. So then later we can collect data post-implementation and really attribute any, improvements mm-hmm. to our restoration.
So it's just like a nice canvas of the region.
Yeah.
Given that, like, the sampling, it doesn't happen just once a year. It happens in the winter and it happens again in the summer. What do those separate windows show?
Well, they showed, differences in seasonality. Different plants grow at different times of the year. Julie can speak more on how long eDNA lasts in the soil. Different animals might be more active mm-hmm. at different times of the year.
Yeah, Julie. I mean, what's so interesting when you're like sampling it during different seasons, from the winter to the summer?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of our questions is, does it make sense to sample both seasons? Like, when do you get the most bang for your buck? And we really found there were different communities in terms of understanding what larger animals like, mammals or like small mice were out and about at different times. But then if you looked under the surface at the soil, we also saw differences in those communities. And so to get like a really rich view of what's really going on, we thought it actually does make sense to sample at both times. And it makes sense, right? Like when you look around, like winter looks really different than summer just to the naked eye. And then we can start answering questions like, hey, like, why is it that this site might have a richer plant community than this other site? Why are some threatened species like more attracted to this area than this other area? What's happening beneath the surface that's explaining those differences? Is it seasonal or is there actually something else going on? Mm.
How many samples do you need to get a good sense of a survey area?
The bare minimum in a small area is 3. So you can start looking at those samples and comparing differences between them. Looking at this study where we're looking at these larger acreages, we actually did some work and it looks like somewhere between 20 and 30 samples is a really nice number to get a sense of one area. Looking across all these different sites, I think this study included almost 1,200 samples. And that gave us that type of rich data that we can start really seeing patterns of, hey, this site that was restored longer ago looks like it's actually doing better in the soil community than a site that was more recent. So we can start making assessments around how well restorations are going as you get more samples.
Yeah, 1,200 sounds robust. You know, I'm no scientist, but that sounds like a lot of samples. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Sarah Gaffney and Julie Stanford about the use of environmental DNA or eDNA to guide restoration in the San Joaquin Valley. Okay, so you have a wealth of samples, Sarah. You recently got back some results from eDNA. What do they include? What did you find?
So many different things. We found some invasive plant species that we didn't know were in the area that we want to go out and actually check and try to find if we can see those on the ground, do some early detection and rapid response. We found some really cool, animals like the California tiger salamander, the western spadefoot. These are species of special concern. We saw a badger. In some of our Kern sites, badgers are, very elusive and fossorial and come out at night. So it's hard to find them on a camera sometimes.
Julie, given that there's it seems, as Sarah just laid out, like a wide range, like a sheer amount of information that can come out of these samples. What goes into processing a sample? I mean, how large is this sample? I mean, how are you able to really like hone in and be able to see evidence of an American badger or a Chinook salmon or other DNA evidence out there?
So these samples are actually quite small. People go out and collect samples in little tubes, right? Like 3 milliliter, 5 milliliter tubes of soil. And then they get sent to a lab. In this case, we worked really closely with the Cali DNA lab at UC Santa Cruz to do the sample processing to extract this environmental DNA from the soil and sediment, and then go through a series of it's called PCR work in the lab, looking and processing for what we call a tree of life panel, which is bacteria, fungi, plants, invertebrates, vertebrates, and eukaryotes, which are basically multi-celled organisms. So they did this like full tree of life panel, and then they send the data to sequencer, where it gets turned into kind of eDNA sequences where, you know, it's not human readable, AAGGRR. And then these files are uploaded to software that called a bioinformatics pipeline, if you want to know the jargon. And so our company makes software like that that we run in the cloud. So the sample, the sequences are uploaded, and then a matching happens where each sequence is matched to an organism, either at the species level or somewhere in the taxonomy. And then you get this big readout of the whole tree of life of all the things that were spotted in the eDNA, thousands of organisms. It's really crazy and can be overwhelming. And then you kind of want to look at it at two levels. You want to first look for things that are specific that you've heard about, but there's a lot of things that, right, like that you don't even know what they are. And so you want to zoom out and look at things at the community level and start categorizing which things are pathogenic, which things are beneficial, which things are threatened, which things are, you know, novel, and kind of understand from a community perspective what's going on.
Mm, that's fascinating. I mean, in addition to kind of getting information and some insight about what calls these areas home, I mean, Sarah mentioned that they became aware that, hey, there's some invasive species or a badger, as I just mentioned. Can you also use eDNA to kind of learn about what used to live there?
Yeah, it's really interesting with soil. The DNA lasts. It can go anywhere from days to weeks. Or if you dig down into the core, people studying ancient eDNA can actually look back in time thousands of years and see what might have been there. It's eDNA is basically sugar, and so things are eating it all the time, but just enough can be saved, especially if soil is really dry, to get that backwards view. In this case, we were probably looking at a range of like days to weeks.
Mm. That's still exciting, though. Sarah, looking ahead, I mean, this is just the beginning. What does the future of eDNA look like for River Partners?
Yeah, we would like to keep using it. For all of the planning projects that we did the data collection on, you know, post-implementation, you know, 3, 5, 10 years after we do our restoration, we want to go back and redo this all over again.
And essentially, like, this tool, eDNA, is going to help guide the restoration work across the San Joaquin Valley.
Yes, hopefully.
How is it funded?
We had a block grant from WCB.
Which is the California Wildlife Conservation Board, right?
Yes.
And then, but that funding essentially ran out?
Yes, that was it was around a 2 to 3 year grant. So the project is ending this month. So as we, you know, write proposals for our actual implementation projects, we can write this work in.
Yeah. So TBD. Thank you so much for letting us like go along for the ride last summer and for joining us a year later with some of the results of what you found through eDNA. Sarah and Julie, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sarah Gaffney is a senior scientist with River Partners, and Julie Stanford is the CEO of eDNA Explorer. We've been talking about the use of environmental DNA, eDNA, to guide restoration in the San Joaquin Valley. Still ahead, summer just begun, but you already need to get your kids out of the house. Well, we have some ideas in this month's Arts Talk. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.